Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, for liberty and justice for all.
If I could ask the board secretary if she could go over how to participate in the meeting virtually and then to call the roll of the directors.
Sure. To avoid creating acoustic feedback, please mute all your devices during the meeting unless you are speaking. Before speaking, please unmute your device and turn down the volume of any other devices that are near you and tuned into the meeting. If you have joined by phone and would like to comment on an item, please press star 9 to let our staff know and wait to be notified. When it is your turn to speak, you will hear a notification asking you to unmute your phone by pressing star 6. If you have joined by computer, you may use the chat feature in Zoom to indicate your desire to speak. When done speaking, please mute your device again. Please participate from a quiet environment so that the board can hear you when you are speaking. And now, roll call. Director Corona?
Here.
Director Slauson?
Here.
Director Record?
Here.
Director Armstrong?
Here.
And our legal counsel is here?
Very good. Just to note that Director Record and Armstrong are joining us virtually this morning. That brings us to public comment. Any members of the public can comment on any subject before the board for a total of 3 minutes. I understand we have one public comment request this morning, which is Dean Wetter from Valleywide. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Honorable President Pauley and members of the board. My name is Dean Wetter, General Manager for Valleywide Recreation and Park District. And I do have some notes here because I can go on and talk about Valleywide for 45 minutes.
We'll give you three.
Thank you for that. Just a little history. Valleywide's 50 years old this year. We do service a population of 275,000 people with over 100 facilities here in your district area, over an 800-square-mile area. It's common for us to see about 10,000 people per day come through our facilities. Valleywide's building blocks has been to ensure that everyone has an equal right to recreation and parks. It's rewarding to remember the impacts that parks have had on our own lives, the impacts of recreation programs, and essentially being the building blocks of creating community. As part of this program, it's important for us to be sustainable. And so as part of being sustainable, we've participated in programs with Eastern Municipal Water District, of which I'm proud of, and I share that pride with you. We've converted over 350,000 square feet of non-functional turf to water-wise landscaping, and we have about 100,000 on the books right now that we're in the planning stages of. We fully understand the seriousness of the drought. Valleywide has been water conscious from the beginning because essentially we have to be. It's one of our largest expenditures in the work that we do. So it's a science to us. We have professionals that are working behind the scenes to make sure that we're using that precious resource to its full potential. You can say that we were green before it was popular to be green. We have invested in state-of-the-art smart controllers, our CalSense systems, over 300 of these programmable sensors are talking throughout our district to notify us in advance if there's any issues. So we're proactive in managing our water resources. Currently, Valleywide uses approximately 1,250 acre-feet of recycled water a year over 100 sites. This translates into approximately 407 million gallons of water, or enough to serve 2,500 households if it was potable water. We appreciate EMWD's support and stewardship in saving water. EMWD's board of directors and staff team are true visionaries, way ahead of the times that go back and date 20 years ago. Visionaries for conservation. Your practitioners are leading the state in safeguarding our precious resources. And speaking on behalf of the region, I share this pride with you. EMWD's nationally renowned Recycled Water Accelerated Retrofit Program has helped us, which translates into helping our community members and our residents. We've transitioned landscape areas to recycled water while also promoting water conservation programs in the process. Our partnership on this program has recently saved an additional 100 million gallons of drinking water per year through our collaboration and efforts. Converting to recycled water reduces the stress on our drinking water supplies. I'm here today to present a plaque in appreciation to the board and staff of EMWD that we salute you, Eastern Municipal Water District, as an industry visionary and a great friend of Valleywide and our community. We'd like to present you with a very unique plaque, and I'll explain this in just a second, which incorporates an air plant. This represents the theme of extreme water efficiency. I'm informed that this plant is the most efficient user of water for life in the Flora community. And so, Valleywide Recreation and Park District, on behalf of our board and our entire staff team, wishes to recognize Eastern Municipal Water District for your support and stewardship in saving water. EMWD has nationally renowned Recycled Water Accelerated Retrofit Program, which helps Valleywide and other customers transition landscape areas to recycled water while also promoting water conservation programs in the process. Valleywide has saved millions of gallons of water and hundreds of thousands of dollars in our partnership with EMWD, allowing stakeholder funds to go towards recreation programs that serve thousands of children throughout the region and regardless of their financial means. On behalf of our board of directors and staff, we salute you, Eastern Municipal Water District. Thank you, President Pauley.
Thank you.
So, President Pauley, could I make a comment?
Absolutely, Director Record.
So, Dean, while you're there, just thank you for making that presentation, and I really appreciate the partnership we have with Valleywide. I mean, we're both agencies are here to serve our constituents, and the way we partner really accelerates our ability to do that. And just hope we can continue this great relationship and utilizing water in the most appropriate way going forward. So thanks again for the partnership. Thanks for coming.
Thank you, Director Record, and thank you for your support always.
And I will also note the great partnership we have, and that we have an agenda item on our agenda this morning that, if passed, will add more to the retrofitting of our parks and schools and Valleywide and the green belt opportunities you guys provide in French Valley. So I'm looking forward to having a discussion on that this morning. So thank you again for being here. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, President Pauley, members of the board.
Very good. Do we have any other people wishing to do public comment this morning, April?
No, not that I'm aware of.
Do we have anybody on virtual that would like to do general public comment?
We do not.
Very good. We will now move on to item 2 on the agenda, which is our executive reports. Mr. Mawad.
Good morning, President Pauley, members of the board. My report is included in your packet. Under new and ongoing items, I wanted to mention to you that this week, on Monday, I had the opportunity to participate in a roundtable discussion with the Secretary of Natural Resources, Mr. Wade Crowfoot, as well as other local water providers in Riverside County. The event was hosted by Riverside Mayor Locke Dawson. It was an opportunity for us at Eastern to highlight all that we've done in terms of local water supply resources, from our desalination program to our recycled water program to our leadership on non-functional turf. Secretary Crowfoot was very complimentary of EMWD and our efforts on those programs, and specifically on our recycled water program and our groundwater desalination program. It was a really good conversation. How can we continue our water use efficiency? There's a couple of takeaways from that conversation. One is Secretary Crowfoot, again, indicated the governor's desire to continue to allow local control as we navigate the current drought. And he also indicated that the state has been very much surprised by the rapid acceleration of the impacts of climate change. They were originally thinking it was going to be 25 years before we're facing these kind of drought conditions. So he recognizes, and he indicated the governor recognizes, the need to modernize the state water system. The next item I wanted to mention to the board, as you may be aware, on July 27th, the Department of Water Resources released the draft environmental impact report for the Delta Conveyance Project. This kicks off a 90-day public review period. We intend on weighing in on the EIR with our support of the project, and I know Metropolitan Water District will also be soliciting comments from its member agencies to weigh in on the EIR. To that end, we've reached out to Ms. Jennifer Pierre, the general manager of the State Water Contractors, and we are working with her to arrange for her to come in and present to this board the details and an update on the Delta Conveyance Project and the recently released environmental document. The next item, I wanted to give you a brief update on our STAG funding request. As you may be aware, the House recently passed the fiscal year 2023 appropriations minibus, and within the Interior EPA and Energy Water Measures, EMWD's projects were listed. As I indicated here in my report, Congressman Takano has sponsored $3.45 million for our Well 56 PFAS treatment, Congressman Calvert $2.5 million for Quail Valley, and Congressman Issa $2 million for Wine Country sewer infrastructure. I did have the opportunity yesterday to attend Congressman Issa's open house in Temecula and relayed this board's appreciation for his continued support, not only on the wine country infrastructure, but overall on all the various initiatives that we have underway. I should also mention that the Senate Appropriations Committee did release their FY23 spending bill, and only 10 projects from the state were included. Unfortunately, EMWD's projects were not listed. However, this occurred last year, and we were included in the House Appropriations, and ultimately those were, in terms of last year, included in the ultimate budget that was approved. Under items of interest to the board, we held a workshop with our customers, specifically our commercial, industrial, institutional customers, to review with them the state's ban on non-functional turf irrigation with potable water. It was a good event. We had 28 participants. Not only Valleywide was here, but school districts, cities, and other representatives throughout our region attended the workshop. Myself and the whole team were here to explain to them what the state's prohibition really means, and the fact that if you have exclusive non-functional turf, you can't irrigate that non-functional turf with potable water. So we do have our staff on the ground working with our customers, providing them all the resources they need, including everything from template letters they can send to their landscapers and other information available, as well as the funding assistance to convert that non-functional turf. We've identified dozens of sites that are exclusively non-functional turf that we're going to be working on essentially shutting off with the cooperation, collaboration with the customers. We'll have a more detailed update on our implementation plan at the next planning committee next week. Also, under items of interest to the board, during the House summer recess, we have arranged for a dinner meeting with Congressman Takano, again, to relay our appreciation for his continued support of EMWD, not only on the STAC funding that I just mentioned, but also his support over the last 2 years with the COVID arrearages funding that we ultimately received. So hopefully you'll be able to join us for that event with Congressman Takano. One final note, it wasn't included in my report because it did occur late yesterday afternoon, but I had the opportunity, as well as the team, yesterday to meet with Senator Roth to discuss Senate Bill 1157, sponsored by Senator Hertzberg. As you're aware, Senate Bill 1157 calls for a continued ratcheting down of indoor water use down to potentially 42 gallons per capita per day by the year 2030. Senator Roth has been a proponent for amendments to the bill, and in fact, Senator Hertzberg has indicated he's willing to consider additional amendments. Our position is an agency like us, who beneficially reuses 100% of our recycled water, it truly is a zero-sum practice to try to reduce the indoor water use. So our ask is that for those agencies who have 100% recycled water, and frankly, for those agencies that recycle a good portion of the indoor water use, there should be a sliding scale or a carve-out, if you will, in the Senate bill. Senator Roth was very supportive of our amendment, and on that call, it was Water Reuse Association, other associations who echoed our position. So we're working closely with Senator Roth. He committed that he'll take those amendments and meet with Senator Hertzberg accordingly. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions the board may have on my report.
I guess I have a question just regarding the state water contractors, the GM.
Yes.
There was somebody from the state water contractors group that spoke at the task force. That's not the same person?
No, I don't believe Ms. Pierre spoke at the task force, no. Okay. It was someone else, but you're right, Director Slauson, that the Delta conveyance was featured at a recent task force meeting.
And I'm happy to see Senator Roth is open to the considering our specific needs.
Absolutely.
So that's great.
Good. Director Records or Armstrong, do you have any questions for the general manager?
I don't. No questions from me.
Very good. Very good. Thank you for that report, Mr. Mawad. Good morning, Laura. Do you have anything for us?
Nothing today.
Very good. Nick, do you have anything for us?
I have nothing today. Thank you.
As you race to the microphone, apparently you do. So good morning.
Good morning, President Pauley and members of the board. This morning, I am very pleased to introduce EMWD's new engineering manager overseeing our wastewater CIP program, and that is Mr. Scott Tolan. Scott has more than 27 years of professional experience in the water industry, serving in roles in both the public and private sector. Most recently, Scott served at IRWD for the past 9.5 years as a senior engineer overseeing multiple large CIP programs. We're very pleased to have Scott as part of the EMWD team. And with that, Mr. Tolan.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Linnea, for that introduction. Good morning, President Pauley and board members. Yeah, I'm very excited to be here at and be part of the EMWD team, and looking forward to managing the wastewater recycled group, transferring a lot of my knowledge set over to those engineers, and likewise learning from them as well. So pleased to be here. Any specific questions you might have?
Yeah, welcome.
Welcome. I will just tell you, if you haven't figured it out already, recycled water is a big deal here at Eastern. And so,
looking forward to it. Yeah, we've got some ideas, and we'll definitely share those and keep that ball rolling.
So, very good. I look forward to having future conversations with you on some of our recycled water efforts.
Certainly.
So.
Certainly. Thank you.
Very good.
Pleasure to be here.
Thank you for the introduction. Do you have anything else for us?
Nothing else.
That was it. Good morning. Matt, do you have anything for the board this morning?
Good morning. I have nothing today. Thank you.
Very good. With that, I think we're going to take, we have an informational item that I want to move up on the agenda, if that is okay, and that's Mr. Bill Hasenkamp, who I understand is coming in virtually.
He is,
I'm
here,
sorry.
Right behind me, President Pauley.
Okay.
So
he can be virtual live. So welcome this morning. Appreciate you coming out to Eastern this morning. You're going to give us an update on the Colorado River, which I know has been in the news a lot recently. I have more of the general public reaching out to me about the Lake Mead situation only because they see all the things that are appearing in Lake Mead since the water is receding. So good morning, welcome, and the floor is yours, sir.
Thank you.
And President Pauley, if I could, I know Jolene Walsh is online, and she's worked with Bill over many, many years. Jolene, did you want to maybe give Bill's background and credentials as well?
Thank you, Joe, and President Pauley and members of the board. As you can see here, today we get to hear a very timely presentation from Bill Hazenkamp. He's the, as many of you know, the manager of Colorado River Resources for Metropolitan Water District, and Bill develops and manages programs related to MWD's Colorado River supplies. He has been with MET for 21 years and has been pivotal in many negotiations on the Colorado River over those years. Bill's also the chair of the Colorado River Basin Salinity Control Forum, and that's a congressionally authorized group whose sole focus is on addressing and reducing the salinity levels in the Colorado River, which is of utmost importance to us and our recycle program. Bill knows the law and the history of the river better than nearly anyone out there, and we're really fortunate that he's part of the team working on behalf of California right now. So, Bill, thank you for being with us today, and take it away.
Thank you. As I'm sure you're aware, Vin Scully passed away yesterday. And Vin Scully was the master at letting the moment speak for itself. There was no greater example of that than the 1988 World Series, when Kurt Gibson was down, two outs in the bottom of the ninth, limped up, hit that historic home run, and Vin Scully just let silence reign and let people take in the significance of that moment, listening to the cheers of the crowds. People knew how historic that moment was. He didn't need to add anything to it. And then finally, after a pause, when it got to sink in, he said, in the year of the improbable, the impossible has just happened. I had a feeling like that in middle of June when I was listening to the commissioner of the Bureau of Reclamation testify before Congress, saying that 2 to 4 million acre feet of cuts are needed on the Colorado River next year. That phrase sunk in, 2 to 4 million acre feet of cuts needed next year to protect the Colorado River. Silence was all that was needed for us that work on the river to know that our river has changed forever. It is going to be a different river going into the future. I've always been optimistic when it comes to the Colorado River. And why not? The Colorado River has been our success story here in Southern California. It's been our backbone supply. Metropolitan was formed to build the Colorado River Aqueduct and bring in Colorado River water into our region. Today, about half of the water in Southern California comes from the Colorado River. But that undersells the river, I think, because a year like this, when it's so dry in California, there's almost no water from Northern California. We have a full Colorado River water aqueduct bringing in almost 1.2 million acre feet of water to our region. In fact, as we speak now, that aqueduct is at a maximum flow, trying to bring as much water as we can to our parched area. There's always been naysayers on the Colorado River. There's been people that have said the Colorado River is, climate change is affecting it, it's not sustainable, and we're going to have to send people back to Missouri. But for us and our region, it's been a success. And why not? It was just 3 years ago that the seven states got together at Hoover Dam and authorized the drought contingency plan. In that plan, we recognized that climate change was drying up the river, and we needed to do something. And the states agreed to voluntary cutbacks of up to 1 million acre feet if needed to protect the reservoirs. Metropolitan stepped up and was willing to contribute water if the reservoir drops. Commissioner of Reclamation Berman is in this photo, along with representatives of each of the seven states. And that plan seemed to be working well. In March of 2020, just a little over 2 years ago, the level of Lake Mead seemed to be stabilized. In 2007, when the current guidelines were put in place that have all of the rules for Lake Powell and Lake Mead, From 2007 to 2020, we've had some wet years and some dry years, but in general, Lake Mead has stayed above the shortage level, above the level of cutbacks. And you can see that line down there, that green line, is where California would eventually be cut back. Nowhere near that line. We had, even though we were facing drought and climate change, we had worked together to reduce our demands on Lake Mead. Certainly it's not full, but it was stabilized. And in March of 2020, there was a good snowpack. I went skiing up in the Rockies. Things looked rosy. As our world shut down and we had to get used to wearing masks, and Zoom was not something on our phone, but that was the new reality. We were sanitizing our groceries. Our personal life was in upheaval in March of 2020, but the Colorado River looked stable. And I was confident that we would have a reliable supply through at least the interim period, which ends in 2026, but into the future, whatever we were doing seemed to be working right. But all that came crashing down on June 14th when the commissioner said, come up with a plan to cut 2 to 4 million acre feet next year by mid-August, which is now 3 weeks away, or I will develop a plan and the feds will take action to protect the reservoirs. And that made the front page of the LA Times the next day. Not that Bass was leading Caruso, but that Lake Powell and Lake Mead were at scary new lows and major cutbacks will be needed on the Colorado River going forward. How did it happen so quickly? Just 2 years ago, things seemed to be going so well. To this cutback, 2 to 4 million acre feet is like saying that's the equivalent of the entire state of Arizona and Nevada's water supply cut back next year. That's a huge volume of water. Well, there are three reasons why we got to a relatively good place 2 years ago to the scary new lows of today. One is, starting in the spring of 2020, the Colorado Basin faced both the hottest and the driest year ever on record. Records going back to 1895. You can see the four basin states were the hottest ever and the driest ever. California was close. We were the second hottest and second driest, but the basin was hot and dry, and that did a number on that snowpack that I had been skiing on. Very little of it made it to the basin. In fact, ever since COVID hit, we've had hot and dry conditions over the Colorado River Basin. Maybe that's a side effect of COVID, is of drought conditions. Who knows what we'll find out. But what we've seen is decreased runoff efficiency over the last 3 years. The precipitation hasn't been terrible, 81 to 91% of average, but the runoff has been dismal, 37%, 57%, and 58%. So we've had very hot and dry conditions of the basin. So that's one reason. The second reason that's impacted the river is that we've shifted all of our supplies to the Colorado River because of the extreme dry conditions in Northern California. Here's Wade Crowfoot and Carla Nemeth at the April snow survey looking at there really isn't much snow to survey this April. And oftentimes, both the Colorado River and the state project, Northern California, are not in drought in the same time. This year, they're both in severe droughts. And so we've gotten only 5% allocation from Northern California the last 2 years. And as a result, we've shifted over to the Colorado River, which is great for our region, but not great for Lake Mead. In 2019, we took 400,000 acre feet from the river. This year, we're going to take 700,000 or 800,000 acre feet more than that. That's a shift of about 10 feet on Lake Mead per year just on Metropolitan's demands. And it wasn't just Metropolitan. Hay prices have increased this year. And agricultural water demand is up. IID is currently overrunning their allocation. And that overrun is coming out of Lake Mead. And it's not just IID. Throughout the lower basin, ag demands are up and water use is up. So you've had the dry conditions coming into the lake and more water going out of the lake of the demands. And the third thing that hit was the federal government decided to take action to protect Glen Canyon Dam, which is the dam that backs water up into Lake Powell. And releases from Lake Powell directly impact Lake Mead. And there are three ways of getting water out of Glen Canyon Dam. There's the normal way, which is the power generation tubes. There's the river outlet works, which are the low level tubes that bypass the power plant. And then there's the spillway that was only used once in the 1980s. And what Reclamation has said is they're very concerned about having the reservoir go below the level where power can be produced. And it's not a very low level. It's still about 4.5 million acre feet of water when power is lost. And all along, all of the studies indicated that if needed, Lake Powell would go below that level. But earlier this year, they said, we really don't want that to happen. They said they cited three reasons. One is protection from the grid. I'm not an energy expert. I know that Lake Oroville went below power pool for a period of months last year. The grid seemed to be stable, but nonetheless, they cited that it's important to protect the grid. Two is that they've never operated those low-level bypass tubes for an extended period of time, and they're concerned that if they did, it might damage the equipment. They've only done it for high flows on short period of times. So they're concerned about their infrastructure. And three, we just learned this year that the city of Page, Arizona, and part of the Navajo tribe in Arizona only get water from the penstocks. And if Lake Powell were to drop below that level, there'd be no water for Page and part of the Navajo. So Reclamation decided to cut back releases to Lake Mead and save more water in Lake Powell. And those three impacts together, the higher demand, the dry conditions, and the desire to protect Lake Powell, have resulted in Lake Mead to drop precipitously in a way never would have expected in 2020. Kind of feel like Dennis Eckersley, who was one strike away from winning that World Series game, only to see everything change in an instant. And now we've dropped significantly, and the forecast is it continue to drop below the level where Metropolitan will start having to make contributions under that plan. And as Lake Mead has dropped, there's been news about things that have happened. So Southern Nevada's original intake has appeared. Luckily, they have a new intake that goes down to Deadpool, so they're okay there. Human remains have been found in barrels in Lake Mead, not once, not twice, but three times so far this year. Gives a new meaning to the term Deadpool. And ghost ships have emerged throughout the lake that have been underwater for many, many decades. It's been a treasure trove of treasure hunters out there. Although it is a national recreation area, so it is prohibited to go out with metal detectors or fishing magnets to try to find treasures, but nonetheless, people are up there all the time trying to do that. But Lake Mead has dropped so quickly. They have new signs that they've on the marina that they put on this year when the lake was full, how it's been dropping, and then for a period of time it was stable. And then you can see from just this year, it's dropped 27 feet alone, vertically, horizontally much more. The marina out there during the spring every week had to move their docks 100 feet as the reservoir continued to drop. A quarter mile so far this year, they've moved their docks in response to this unprecedented drop in the reservoir. Now, Reclamation has done an analysis to come up with their reasoning and rationale about why extra water and extra cuts are required. And this is a summary of their modeling. And I won't go into the details, but basically it says, depending on what you assume the future hydrology is, if it's 80% of normal runoff or more, we really don't need to do anything to protect the power generation at Lake Powell and Lake Mead. But if the future is drier than it's been, or as dry as it's been the last few years, we need conservation in the range of 1.5 2 to 4 million acre feet would be kind of the worst case. So when the commissioner made her remarks, she was somewhat conservative. She was basically saying, if we continue to have dry conditions like we've had the last few years, and we want to protect power generation at Lake Powell and Lake Mead, we will have to cut back in the range of 2 to 4 million acre feet. So the states have taken that call seriously. And we have been meeting weekly, the seven states and the federal government, since June to try to meet this deadline, which is now only 3 weeks away. Now, a little bit about kind of the dynamics between the states or among the states. It was 100 years ago this November that the Colorado River Compact was signed. It was a historic event where the seven states took destiny in their hands and said, we are going to equitably divide the Colorado River. We're going to have each state have an equal access to the river going forward, regardless of when you accessed the water. Whether you accessed it early or came on later, you will have an equal share. But as we see, the actual the concept was 7.5 million acre feet for the upper basin and 7.5 million for the lower basin. But if you look at the actual water use today, you'll see the upper basin's only using about 4.5 million acre feet and the lower basin about 9 million acre feet. And Mexico, through their treaty, 1.5 million acre feet. Why is it that the lower basin seems to be using more than what the compact allowed and the upper basin less? Well, the upper basin has been limited by the infrastructure. Most of the reservoirs are downstream of their demands. Denver and Salt Lake City are far up in the system, and they really can't have access to water stored in those big reservoirs. So they haven't had the ability to fully use their water. In the lower basin, we've got Lake Mead upstream, so it's easy to access our water. But why is the lower basin using more than the amount that was identified in the compact? Well, a dispute arose between Arizona and California. Arizona asserted that we get access to our tributary water, and that doesn't count towards the compact amount. The tributary water would be the Salt River Project and the other rivers within the state of Arizona. Even though they're part of the Colorado Basin and were part of the compact in 1922, Arizona argued successfully before the Supreme Court that the tributaries within their state don't count, so they get all the tributary water plus their share of the Colorado River, which increased the deliveries to the lower basin to 9 million acre feet. California did have, however, a response. We were fighting Arizona over that additional delivery of water, and we did put a clause in the authorization of the Central Valley Project that if and when there's ever a shortage on the Colorado River, the CAP is junior to all users in California. So California has the senior right in the lower basin. So now when the states are figuring out a plan to reduce their use, each state has their own rhetoric. The upper basin says, well, we shouldn't have to contribute. The lower basin is overusing, so the lower basin should take the cuts that the commissioner is requiring. The lower basin responds, no, we're all in this together. We should all cut back, including the upper basin. California says, Arizona, you're the junior priority. You should take the majority of these cuts. Arizona says, no, this is part of the reason why we're in this situation is the evaporation losses from the reservoirs, and those should be equally shared. So there's a lot of rhetoric among the states about who should take the cuts and why. We've tried to set those aside and figure out, can we voluntarily come up with a plan that we agree to that doesn't get into the legal aspects of what agencies are entitled to under the river. And we are making a lot of progress. Within California, there are four contractors that have been in the discussions. It's the four contractors that have to approve all of the agreements within California because they're Section 5 contractors and get water from the Bureau of Reclamation. That is the Metropolitan Water District, Coachella Valley Water District, Imperial Irrigation District, and Palo Verde Irrigation District. And the City of Needles, for some reason, they also have a Section 5 surplus contract. City of Needles signs all the agreements. I've yet to see them in one meeting. But those rest of those four agencies have been participating and all are bringing something to the table. All are willing to either provide money, water, or both as part of this plan, which might be revealed in 3 weeks. If we don't come up with a plan that's successful to the federal government, even if we, the 3 week deadline is just to have the framework of a plan. We still have a lot of work to get it across the finish line. We have to do the environmental compliance, the interstate agreements, and get all the board's approval. Most likely by the end of the year, in December, is when we would take these suite of agreements to the Metropolitan's board for consideration. That's if we're successful in developing a plan. If not, Interior said that they will take action themselves to protect these reservoirs. And they've cited 4 different ways that they could act if needed. One is, they said, they could follow the strict priority system. We could take CAP to zero, as the agreements say, and then within each state follow the priority system. And within California, Metropolitan's the junior priority, so they would start with Metropolitan and go through the system. That's one way they could cut back. But they said that's not the only way. They said another way is to take the evaporation and system losses and equally distribute it to everybody, because everybody should share in those losses under that argument. And that's about 1.2 million acre feet of losses that would be distributed equally to everybody. That's another way they could do this. A third way they could do that is every year reclamation determines what is reasonable and beneficial. They make sure that anywhere Colorado River water goes, it's only for reasonable and beneficial uses, and each agency has to go to reclamation and get approval for that level of every year for their water order. Reclamation could decide that things like watering non-functional turf is no longer a beneficial use of Colorado River water, or growing alfalfa in the desert is not a beneficial use. They could come up with any rationale about what is reasonable and beneficial. In fact, in 2003, they did that. They determined that IID was wasting water and cut them back. Ultimately, that issue was set aside when the QSA was signed. But they have that authority. They could cut anybody back if they're determining that the water is not used beneficially. And the final way they could cut them back is they could do what they did with the Central Valley Project and the state project and provide human health and safety water first, regardless of the priority system, and say human needs are first before agriculture. So any of those actions are in the federal toolbox, and everyone could be impacted. And certainly it would lead to litigation no matter what the federal government did. So it's in the state's interest to come up with this plan, as difficult as it is, so that we avoid litigation and uncertainties. And all the while, the clock is still ticking on the expiration of the interim guidelines. All of the current rules for shortages and reservoir operations expire in 2025. We were supposed to be using this time to work with the states to come up with new guidelines, but we've been so focused on the short term that we haven't even had a chance to think about the long term. And the long term is going to be an order of magnitude more difficult than just this agreement that we're trying to work on for next year. I mean, if it's taking this much effort for a 1 year, 2 year plan, how much effort is it going to be for a 30-year plan that we only have 3.5 years to do all the environmental work on it, all of the agreements in place that will develop a path forward for the Colorado River? So there is a lot of work that needs to be done in the next couple years. And it's really quickly evolving and quickly developing. So what are the implications to our region, to Eastern and to Metropolitan? Well, the first thing is that our ability to fill the aqueduct, as we've to have certainty that we can fill the aqueduct with our water stored in Lake Mead, will start to erode in 2023. As Lake Mead drops, the ability to take water out of our storage account in Lake Mead goes down. That was part of the agreements. As Lake Mead drops, the straw gets smaller. And if Lake Mead were to get to 1025, which is another 30 feet lower, we can't access our water stored in Lake Mead, and we're limited to whatever our agreements are in California. What that would mean is, rather than being able to deliver 1.2 million acre feet, we might be limited to about a million, which is what we do within California. That's just the status quo. There's also additional pressure to do more, for everyone to cut back as part of this plan or some longer-term plan. So if we don't have water to blend from Northern California, and we're completely reliant on the Colorado, we will have to reduce our demands as a region, because we won't have the same aqueduct supplies in the near future. Maybe next year we will have a full aqueduct, but we can't count on it, and for certainly in 2024 it becomes less certain. So we're going to have a discussion with our board next week about what are we going to respond? What are we going to do to increase conservation in our service area? Are we going to consider some kind of mandatory action, allocation plan? Are we going to increase our advertising campaign? Our board will be discussing that and having some tough questions. But as long as we're limited in water from Northern California, we will start to also be limited in water from the Colorado River, and it will, and we will have to respond as a region as we've done in the past. And the next few years of these discussions at the table will determine the future of this great river. There's so much at stake that we will need a collective effort here to both respond to the drought on the Colorado River, but also advocate for certain positions. We will likely need federal legislation to get this deal done in a few years, and it might be contentious. So we will need to have everyone in our region on the same page to the extent we can going forward as we tackle some of these difficult decisions and agreements going forward. So thank you for your time today. And I'm happy if you have any questions, I'd be happy to try to address them.
First of all, thank you for being here. That was some very impactful information. I do know that the board will have questions, but before I do, I want to personally thank you on behalf of the board for the Vin Scully tribute. I think you do have a lot of Dodger fans up here on this board, so thank you for that. Director Record, would you like to I'm sure you have a couple questions or comments if you'd like to go first.
I do. Thank you, President Pauley. Bill, thanks for coming out. I've been working with Bill for a long time, and certainly Bill is the point person for Met when it comes to Colorado River issues, so appreciate you being here today. Bill, two questions. One is, when I talk to growers from Imperial or Palo Verde, they have this vision in their mind that the federal government's going to come in and, or somebody is, and going to pay them, I've heard anywhere from $1,500 to $4,000 an acre foot for water. And I think that's very short-sighted, and I think that if that's the attitude, they run the risk of maybe impacting their long-term allocations in Colorado River water. So I'm curious about how the discussions are going within California, more so than discussions with the other basin states. And the second question is, in recent years, Imperial has made the salt and sea an issue, and are they doing that again this year?
Thank you, Director Record. I'll start with your second question first. The Salton Sea is in the discussion, certainly, if IID is going to conserve water, as they did in the QSA, it will impact the Salton Sea. The state of California has done an analysis to say if IID were to conserve 250,000 acre feet a year to 350,000 acre feet a year over the next 4 years, what would that do to the Salton Sea? And they have identified the number of acres that would be exposed prematurely. Ultimately, those acres will be exposed, but they're going to be exposed earlier. And what the cost is of mitigating that. And the federal government is in the discussions, and they're prepared to put money into the Salton Sea. And the state of California is prepared to provide the environmental compliance needed for extra conservation to go forward. So we've got both commitments from the state and the federal government to meet the needs of the Salton Sea, and I think IID is satisfied up to that point. To your first point, that is a big problem. There are a lot of farmers that are seeing dollar signs. My understanding is Imperial County Farm Bureau sent a letter to Reclamation saying we're willing to conserve 500,000 acre feet a year at $2,300 an acre foot, right? That would, all the money that the feds have for this program would be gone in 1 year for one program. The feds did say they have $200 million plus $100 million from the 500-plus plan that was approved last year. It's only going to go so far depending on the ultimate cost of conservation. And if the price is too high, then the question is, okay, will the feds cut you back and you'll get nothing? So you can get a voluntary program now with a certain amount of money, or you can hold out for more with the risk of getting cut back later with nothing. So that is a challenge, and we'll see if they can come around to a reasonable price for conservation.
Thanks.
Director Corona, any questions on this?
I too like your analogies with Vince Scully, and I think one of the important things in that analogy is the importance of reading the scouting report. And in the scouting report that Kirk Gibson read, with a 3-2 count, Eckersley was going to throw a backdoor slider, and he did, and Kirk Gibson hit it out. So I think that also applies for us in what we're doing, always to, you know, be prepared and read what's going on as we go forward. I agree with Director Record on this thing with them selling the water back, and my concern is that you start selling the water and not using the water, that you may not see that water again. And although you talked about ag versus residential, well, as a farmer, I don't produce agricultural food to feed myself. I create it to feed other people. And so all use of agricultural products is for human consumption. So you can drink all the water you want, but if you don't eat anything, you're going to die too. So another thing that I think is important is that the agricultural community cannot become belligerent as to their water rights, because Congress can come in at any time and change those rights. So I think that's important too. So I appreciate you coming down and giving us all this wonderful news. the other thing I was going to say is as agriculture, there's huge amounts of agricultural ground that is now owned by foreign companies that are using our water resources to raise alfalfa and then shipping it to Saudi Arabia, whether it be to feed cattle or camels or horses or whatever. And I don't know if maybe our government needs to look at something like that. I want everybody to be provided with the necessary resources to eat and survive. But these are resources. I think it's almost a national problem that places where they don't have water, and then they're coming here and then exporting our water. It's done in all kinds of agricultural commodities. And, you know, I grow grapefruit, and some of my fruit goes to Japan and things like that. But I'm not getting $20 an acre for water. So I think that's something that really needs to be looked at. That's all I have.
Thank you, Director Slauson.
I would just say I appreciate you coming down. It's I have a much better understanding of what we're facing and some of the details involved. I don't know if I liked what you said, but I do appreciate how you made it topical. It made it much more understandable and enjoyable learning the bad news. So thank you for your time and your expertise.
Yeah, thank you for that. And in response to your comments, I think in the and Director Recker's comments as well, what we're focused on between now and 2026 is voluntary compensation, paying farmers and urban entities to the extent. I mean, Phoenix is participating in this program as well. They're going on groundwater and off of surface water. Voluntary compensation through 2026. After 2026, though, you can't voluntarily pay forever. We need some kind of structural changes to this new reality. And I think perhaps similar to the QSA. The QSA, California permanently reduced its use by 20%. That's what we need to do as a basin, permanently reduce our use by about 20%. You know, California did it lining canals and, you know, investments and things. So I think we're going to have to, for the short term, it's really paying for fallowing on a voluntary basis or other conservation. But the long term is where we really need to start thinking outside the box. And the issues you brought up about, you know, exporting food internationally, how does that fit into all of this discussion? So that's going to be the much more challenging phase.
Director Armstrong, do you have any comments or questions for our guest?
Yes, thank you. I would just want to say thanks for coming today. Appreciate all the effort you make. I don't envy being in your position, but I know you're fighting for tens of millions of people and their water security and balancing all of that with seven states. So really appreciate what you're doing. The Vin Scully quote that comes to mind for me is something about good isn't good when what you're expecting is better. And it just seems like good would be great right now if we got some good news out of all of this. So I just wish you good luck with your efforts. I do have a question related to what I'm trying, and I know that this is difficult to answer because I know things change, but if Metropolitan has on average 1.6 million acre feet of demand from its member agencies and from its region, about what percentage is the Colorado River of the supply mix to Metropolitan on an average basis? And then what is the potential magnitude of our reduction?
Yeah, so as far as the supply mix, so the demand for imported water has been dropping. It was 2 million acre feet not too long ago. Now it's down to 1.6, maybe 1.5. And through the development of new programs like the Regional Recycle Plant or Pure One Water Southern California, we're likely to continue to reduce our demands. But at the moment, it's roughly on average about half of 800 on average comes in from Northern California and 800 from the Colorado River. But we rarely have average. I mean, the state project is so fickle, it can go from, we've delivered in 2019 almost 100% state project water to Eastern. In fact, we delivered so much state project water that it was so pure, we had to blend in some Colorado River water to prevent a corrosion of the pipes. And then we go from that to 100% Colorado River water in a year like this. So the averages are kind of misleading. It's really in really thinking in a year like this, what's the impact in a year like this? And as far as the magnitude of the cuts, that is really something that we have to work out. The good news is that we have 1.2 million acre feet of water stored in Lake Mead. Now, we might not be able to take it out to fill the aqueduct, but we will use that to buffer any cuts that we have to make. We've already pre-made our cuts, and we're going to use that if any cuts are triggered. So in the short term, I don't see us actually having to make cuts other than not being able to get our water out of storage, which is still a limiting factor. It's just not a cut. A direct cut. It's just I'm not answering the question well, but it's the loss in a year like this would be maybe 10% of our supply from the Colorado River in a year that we had planned to have a full aqueduct and no longer can because we can't take water out of storage.
Thank you. Appreciate that. I don't have any other questions.
Thank you. Let me just close out by saying this. In the 16 years I've sat on this board, this is probably the best presentation from someone from Met that I've ever seen. So I really do appreciate it. Great information. In the 80-some years since the Colorado Aqueduct was built, I mean, the expansion of Southern California, the expansion of Southern Nevada, the expansion of Arizona agriculture in the Phoenix region certainly has put stresses on the Colorado River for all of us. And so I will notice, I normally do, that, you know, a good 38 miles from here on Google Earth is the largest collection of water molecules on planet Earth. And at some point, we are going to have to get serious about tapping into ocean desal. That is just my personal opinion, but I think it's one that we need to take a close look at. We're always going to be on the Colorado River system, but obviously at some point we need to expand our water resources by using the ocean desal. So, again, thank you for your time. Thank you for coming here. Appreciate it very much. Director Record, you had another closing comment?
Yeah, just one more comment. It's related to what Director Corona said. When it comes to deciding what kind of crops we grow, I think that's better left to the local level. Just like, you know, we don't want the state telling us how much we should or how we should reduce our use. I really don't want to see the public say, don't grow almonds, don't grow alfalfa. And if you look at what we import, whether it's an iPhone or a car or whatever, it all has a water component in it, and we import a lot more water than we export. So I would just say that from my perspective, when it comes to these negotiations and people say, well, we're going to limit what crops you grow, I said, let's not go there. Let's not support that. Let's let the locals figure out what crops are going to be grown or not grown. Thanks for being here, Bill.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. With that, we will go back to our agenda. We're going to go to item 3, which is our consent calendar. I do know we have some firms that have been waiting for the consent calendar here. I apologize for moving our special guest up, but if you're in the water industry, I think everybody needed to hear what that presentation was. So with that, on the consent calendar, do we have any members of the board who would like to pull an item for separate vote or separate discussion or question?
I'd move the item.
Hearing none, we have a motion by Director Corona.
I'll second it.
Seconded by Director Slauson. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
That passes 5-0. And again, if you were here for the consent calendar items, I appreciate you giving us some time for that presentation this morning. We will now go to our action calendar, item 4 on our agenda. We will start with item A, which is to approve and authorize contact with James W. Fowler Company for $4.4 million under specification number 1434P, the French Valley Recycled Water Pipeline, Phase 2, an additional appropriation of $5.6 million. Good morning.
Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. I'm pleased to present this this item for your review and approval, and consideration and approval. As by way of background, the French Valley Recycled Water Expansion Project has been made possible by the district's completion of the Benton Road 2-million-gallon recycled water tank that was part of our system stabilization program funded through the Title 16 program with the Bureau of Reclamation. The project is designed to expand recycled water use in the French Valley region, specifically for common area landscapes. It's a three-phased program. Phase one, indicated in the green legend there, is already in and installed and providing service to a variety of customers in the area. Phase two is what we're here to talk about today, and it extends recycled water up Poroy, almost up to the Winchester Road, and then further east on Benton Road. Phase 1 and Phase 2 are within the existing improved roadways.
Phase three is really a developer-led portion of the project. Their street improvements are being completed by development in the area. We've partnered with Polte and Lennar, and we have completed a significant portion of the pipeline along Washington through reimbursement agreements. So with that, the phase two benefits will provide a direct supply offset for over 200 acre-feet of existing potable water landscape customers. All of those polygon areas are the actual landscape irrigated areas that will be served by this project, some of which are the valley-wide parks, Emerald and Brookfield. We also have Temecula Unified School District that's going to benefit. We have a wide range of valley-wide maintained streetscapes and several HOAs in the area. In addition, it's going to support future development that will be constructed and provide supply to the Phase 3 section. We advertised plans and specs last May, and bids were received on the 23rd. We did receive 10 bid packages, two of which were deemed non-responsive. Our lowest bid was from James Fowler for just over $4.4 million, which is very close to our engineer's estimate of $4.45 million. If approved by the board, we are anticipating to start construction right away, and we are anticipating to be completed in about a year. The plan is to have all of the retrofits completed at the same time so that once the pipeline is put in service, we can turn the water on to the customers as well. So what we are recommending is execution with a contract with James Fowler in the amount of $4.425 million. Administrative award and execution of ancillary contracts necessary to complete the project, an additional appropriation of $5.6 million, which brings the total project cost up to about $5.87 million. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Any questions from members of the board on this item?
No questions.
Move approval.
Can I ask, do we have someone from James Fowler here today? Very good. Thank you for being here. I represent this area on the board. I have been very vocal about expanding our recycled water system in French Valley for a long time, as many members of the Eastern staff here know. I want to make sure that we always have green grass in our parks and schools for our youth. I want to make sure that we maintain the property values in these drought conditions to have the green belts well-watered with recycled water. So I look forward to seeing this project completed as soon as possible. I appreciate you guys being here today. It's always good to meet the people that are doing the work for us. So with that, Director Record, I believe, made the motion. I'm going to second that motion. Can I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
And that passes 5-0. Thank you very much for that. We're going to go on to item B, which is approve and authorize a one-year agreement with up to 4 one-year optional renewals for Pacific Star Chemical, doing business as North Star Chemical, for the purchase and supply of sodium hydroxide for the full term not to exceed $3.1 million. Good morning.
Good morning, President Pauly and board members. I'm Jeff Wasserman, Purchasing and Contracts Manager. So by way of background, on June 2nd, staff received two submittals in response to the district's request for proposals for sodium hydroxide. Pacific Star Chemical, doing business as North Star Chemical of Sherwood, Oregon, provided the lowest cost, highest scoring response. Sodium hydroxide is a chemical used for pH control, conducting live stream discharges, and membrane and scrubber system cleaning, and is used at the district's 4 water reclamation facilities, the Paris and Hemet water filtration plants, and Paris and Menifee desalters. A cross-functional team of staff reviewed the solicitations in accordance with a common set of criteria, which include price and payment terms, contractor qualifications and experience, contractual exceptions, past performance, and insurance and safety records. As indicated in the table on the bottom of page 1, North Star Chemical provided the lowest cost, approximately $100,000 less than the competition, and scored highest overall. North Star Chemical will support district operations out of their Santa Fe Springs facility. They're a new supplier to the district, so staff called several references and received outstanding feedback from local public agencies, including Elsinore Valley Municipal Water District and the City of Riverside. Over the last few years, sodium hydroxide usage has significantly increased for several reasons. The first is neutralization requirements for new membranes and citric acid cleaning rates have increased, pH adjustment requirements, and new sites, including the Paris 2 desalter, have come on board. Staff estimates that usage will be approximately 186,500 gallons per year, which equates to about $635,000 annually. Due to the chemical market volatility, staff recommends a one-year contract with four optional one-year renewals. Pricing will remain fixed for the first year with future adjustments based on supply increases to the company, governmental regulatory increases, or consumer price index or producer price index increases. The district does have the option to review pricing during the term and not exercise future renewals if pricing is higher than market rates. Therefore, at this time, staff is recommending the board approve and authorize a one-year contract with up to four optional one-year renewals with Pacific Star Chemical for the purchase of sodium hydroxide in the not-to-exceed total of $3,175,000. I'd also like to let the board know that Michael Davis is here today representing North Star Chemical. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions for the board on this? Mr. Davis, thank you for being here. Always appreciated when we're doing, especially with the new vendor, to show up and introduce yourself. Appreciate that very much. There are no questions. I'll look for a motion and a second on this item.
I'll move approval.
Moved by Director Slauson, second by Director Corona. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauley?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Passes 5-0. Again, I really appreciate your attendance on this item this morning. We'll now go to item C, which is to approve and authorize an award of contract with Schuler Construction or Contractors Incorporated for $493,000 under RFP number 3511, Operations and Maintenance Center, Pedestrian Improvements, and an additional appropriation of $662,000. Good morning, Mr. Stone.
Good morning, President Pauley and members of the board. Before I get started, I'd actually like to introduce Brian Soule of Schuler Constructors. He's here with us today.
Thank you, sir, for being Schuler, here. Appreciate it.
Schuler is a long-standing contracting partner for the district, having completed dozens of projects with us. So we're grateful to have them on this project. They've been a wonderful team member. So we'll get started with the presentation. As the introduction stated, this is pedestrian improvements here on the campus. We're intending to improve the functionality of the district's flow. As the board may be aware, we have lots of staff that walk among the campus around Trumbull Ponds and in the general area. This is the phase one of an overall project. The overall project will include relocating the gatehouse at Guard 5. It does tend to flood when we do have rain events, so we need to get it up out of the water. We would do some retrofit work at Gate 1 to accommodate that future phase. And then the current phase that I'm presenting to you today will be constructing pedestrian walkways. So this is the first bid package, which will take care of the pedestrian walkways in the area. The relocation of Gate 5 guardhouse, as I indicated, will be coming before the board at the end of this year. So from the photo you can see, we have a lack of sidewalks, which forces our pedestrians, the district staff, to walk into the vehicle pathways, creating a safety issue. We've had the staff come through, open the vehicle gates, enter the thing, and then we still have traffic coming in and out. So our goal is to create some dedicated pedestrian walkways and pedestrian gates to access the campus from various points. The proposed improvements at Gate 5 are highlighted in yellow. You can see the long stretch going back into the campus on the photo on the left, and then we will be painting a pedestrian walkway through the parking area to connect it to the OMC building. And then on the right, you can see a blow-up of what we're going to do, where the slide gate actually is. We're going to create a knockout so that the pedestrians can pass safely around the gate and maintain functionality there. Up at Gate 1, we are going to construct essentially a similar situation with new sidewalks and whatnot. This is looking out of the facility. To the left of this photo is the Trumbull Ponds, so this is looking out onto Trumbull Road. We're going to construct a small stretch of sidewalk and a pedestrian gate in our chain link fence to allow staff to enter the walking path around the Trumbull Pond to be able to enter in, back into the district facilities at the existing pedestrian gate. And we'll also be constructing a new concrete pad for that future temporary guard shack for when we do the primary work down at Gate 5. The bid results, we solicited this through purchasing. We had three responsive bidders. Our lowest responsible bid was Schuler Construction in the amount of $493,543, slightly above the engineer's estimate. With board approval, we would like to start this immediately in August with a construction completion of November of this year. As such, our recommendation today is to award a contract for signature by the general manager to Schuler Construction in the amount of approximately $493,000, administrative award of any other necessary contracts to execute the work, and finally an additional appropriation of $662,000, bringing us to current project cost of just under $800,000. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions the board might have.
Any questions? Director Slauson.
I do have a question I didn't think of in Ops and Engineering. The cobblestone that's being replaced, that's not a water quality permeable mix or anything?
No, it was just to stop weeds.
Okay. All right. No, it looks good.
Any other questions? Moved by Director Cronin. I had one quick question, and since Dan is sitting here, Dan, would we consider this part of improving our safety program here at Eastern?
That's what I thought.
And again, thank you for being here. Moved by Director Corona, second by Director Slauson. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
That passes 5-0. Why don't we take about a 10-minute break this morning before we move on to informational item B?